The founders forgot that we had medical liberty.
We seem to be losing by taking the side of the middle. And we seem to constantly be losing.
I think Trump has made some kind of arrangements with Russia.
This person has made the allegations that they were a man.
If there's content that's borderline, that's content that we basically will not.
There is no second best. There's no second best crypto asset.
Let's talk about science.
I respect you and I have a great deal of appreciation to you, JF, because in a time when everybody was attacking me, when Sargon doxed me and smeared me, you were the only one who gave me a platform, and you were very kind in helping me put the truth out there.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG tonight. How are you doing, people of the regular chat? Not much to say tonight, so it's our last show of the week. The weekend is coming, not much news, so it will be a chill show. If you have questions, you can ask questions. I've pulled my game because today I've had the pleasure of finding moments to engage with my game again. It had been a while I hadn't advanced. I've done some tower dynamics, and I can show you the basics of this kind of programming in Godot. Godot is a language that I learned for the purpose of this game, because normally I don't do games for desktop PCs, but Godot is an interesting platform for developing games. It works on a basis of Python-like language, but there's lots of things that are specific to the 3D world of Godot. So here's the environment of Godot. Let's see, do I have my camera? Did it disappear? Oh, it's just, it needs to be put above, maybe. That's weird. Anyways, you don't necessarily need to see my face, but it's weird that that the Logitech camera isn't showing. Let me see here. Mm-hmm. Normally when a source is above the other, you should see it. Ah, there it is. There I am. Blimpy Supervisor says, hello, Hal. Today I've been studying wind chimes. Okay, bro. Okay. End of the line. Joel says, Jeff, is there any predicated outcome where Donald Trump does not end his presidency as a disappointment for the right, except for Israel Hawks? No, I don't think you can dream of a surprise from Trump anymore. I had given one person chance that maybe Trump is secretly trying to play the Jews, and he arrives at the presidency and boom, he decides everything against them. But no, I don't think at this point you can have any hope, because what he's done, if anything, it's the best boost that he can do. If anything, the next 3 years will be worse. So I don't see the things improving. I see it very blackpilling. The Trump presidency will not have changed America fundamentally. Pruitt says, if you had to choose one, would you rather Jews be spread out with no nation or all in one nation? Definitely all in one nation. I would love if that was the case, because you remove the whole unhealthy relationship between Jews and the U.S. government, and it doesn't matter that they have Israel. No, it doesn't matter at all, because whatever Israel does, it will pay the price of it in its wars, in the enemies that it does to itself. But the big problem is Israel as a portion of the American democracy, and a big portion, arguably more than 95%, Israel controls it, and that's where you get a government that cannot serve the majority people of the US because they're bought out. So definitely all people should be living sovereignly among themselves, because as soon as you have a difference, as soon as you have a difference in criminality rates, political preference, asymmetric use of social welfare, any of these differences will create conflict, and any of these differences will lead to a headbutting, a democratic headbutting in your nation. If we all had the same set of interests and roughly the same capacities, it would make no, there would be no question around what is meritocracy and what is fairness. But because we are different, it leads to conflict. Richard Luther says he wants me to read the Wikipedia description of a sex act called the rusty trombone, which is a hand job from behind by a woman onto a man while she is licking his anus also. Look, bro, the anus function is to shit. It is not an item of pleasure. It should not be included in your sex life, even if it's with a woman. It's still gay to be having a woman lick your anus. So no, I reject your Wikipedia page. I reject the rusty trombone. Stop bringing this crap here. This is not a show about your leftist sexual fantasies and anal hedonism. There's plenty of place for anal hedonism in society. This show is for the other people. Okay? End of the line. Joel says, Jeff, can you tell us your experience on self-editing the revolutionary phenotype? Some people say that one should never self-edit, but instead pay an outside editor to objectively edit the material. Well, I may be an exception to this, but I think I've done an okay job of editing, you know. I did give the manuscript to a professional reviewer for the editing correction round, but it was not an editing of the kind of putting it on Amazon. It was an editing of the kind of rereading and correcting for errors. And let me tell you, I've not been super enthusiastic about the editing work that I've got. I paid cheap, of course. I paid at the book butchers. And I understand they are very limited in what they can do. You give them a full book that they have to revise in full. They can't be super creative. They can really just give you, hey, there was an E here. You remove the E, proper orthograph, that kind of stuff. The best relationship that I've had in editing was with, I don't even remember his name, but I was starting to do business with him, and I was hiring him in the time where the revolutionary phenotype, I had just half of it written. And he did a wonderful job, a really fascinating job with the last chapter, the end of DNA. So chapter 12, you can see that it's written in a comic fashion with twist of irony. And he did a lot of this. He, you know, where I would phrase the irony in a way that doesn't feel really English, I would lay it out, and he would phrase it in a beautiful, poetic manner. Now, that kind of editor, that guy was a biologist, so he knew what I was talking about. He was emotional about it. He could feel it. So he did a very, very good job. But let me tell you, if you go pick a random editor that's on these professional book editing websites, there's so much margin that the website takes. The editor ends up getting paid so little that all they can do is really revise the orthograph, cheap corrections. And I was trying to push them. I was like, hey, I'm willing to pay your top price if you can be a little more poetic. Make it digestible for a larger audience. Make it poetic. Make it funny. But I couldn't get that from them. I could only get that from the special editor that I met on Skype. Like, I don't even remember how I connected with him, but he's the one who had the talent to really rephrase and to really restructure the paragraph so that it really it flows and it feels better. That as far as the self-editing process, it's a painful process. You know, you have to choose the font, and then Amazon reads the font in a different manner, and then it leads to a different page count. You have to review. There's a lot of pain to go through in the editing process. That's just re-verification and painful. It's not creative. It's really just basic work. And I've done it all, and yes, it's painful, but you go through it because you're motivated by a greater ideal. And that greater ideal was the idea of making $16 per book instead of $2 per book. And that to me was very important, because I look at the revolutionary phenotype. I know I can have my own publicity around it that will, back at the time of publishing, I'm like, okay, I have a potential to self-publicize and all, but this is going to get me an amount of sell that is incomparable to the Book and More Star New York Times bestsellers. So I'm like, but if I make 8 times more money per book than they do, then my self-publication capacity starts to be interesting. So most self-publishers, they end up selling like 1,000 times less book than J.K. Rowling. I was like, maybe if I can sell 100 times less book than J.K. Rowling and make a lot of money per book, then it's worth it. And the way I was seeing it is the revolutionary phenotype, I don't think it has even peaked yet. I think it's a book that should be much more ubiquitous maybe in 30 years from now, because people will have abandoned the whole smearing of JF. People will have accepted that, okay, there's this guy who has different political opinions than me, but he said the truth, so let's let's listen to him. So that way, down the line, 30 years, or even when I'm dead, my children will be able to continue living from the income generated by the revolutionary phenotype. If I had sold my right to an editing house, they would be constantly republishing new releases, and I would make $1, and then I would make 50 cents, and then I would be dead, and I couldn't even renegotiate. That way, when I think that the revolutionary phenotype will be the most popular, will be after my death, and it will serve my it will serve my children more. End of the line. Joel says, did you also design the cover or get a professional artist to create the abstract image? I got a professional artist at Bespoke Covers, but he didn't do a job that was sufficient to me. So I had told him, you know, make some electronics that connects to the layer of protein, RNA, and then DNA. But the DNA segments were all straight. If I showed you an early version of that cover, it was all straight DNA, all straight RNA, a bunch of protein, and then the electronics. It was like poop, 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 poop. And I was like, oh, that's not beautiful. And, you know, I was in such a... I was so busy when I edited the revolutionary phenotype. I was like, I want to get done with this, but this cover sucks. And I was like, what can I do? What can I do to make it beautiful? And I start taking his cover, and I applied smearing effects on the 2D images. I start bending and curving the image, and I'm like, oh, I can, without having the initial file, I can curve those DNA segments in a 2D, 3D manner that's quasi-3D because I screwed them on paint. And so I start tweaking the segment to curve them a little bit, round them, and then it strikes me as I curve them. Wow, that's a flower, bro. That's a fucking flower. And I'm like, wow. So the revolutionary phenotype is... a biological entity that's developing in nature. It's a flower made of electronics at the base, proteins at its core, DNA and RNA floating around, but slowly getting controlled by the electronics. I knew that I wanted a full black and white cover because I wanted this to be pure. You know, I think it speaks when you have a full black and white cover and you succeed at evoking something graphically with it. It says, look, this is pure thought. This is first principle. It is not there to entertain you. It is really deep. And that's what so I ended up being super satisfied by the work that I've done at the last minute. Man, I was lucky that I could find a skewing function that allowed me to skew each segment and then to see the flower. And then I'm like, that is it. That is my cover. Gusparovsky says, hey, JF, in your intro, when you say this person said that he was a man with a stop end signal, who are you referring to? Oh, that was a random news story that I was covering about a trans that I think did some violence in Oregon, something like this, you know. And I was like, this person alleged that he was a man, and that was back then where the YouTube rules were tightening, and you couldn't say that he wasn't a man, but you could say that he was alleging that he was a man, and that show. I was talking about how when you say allege, you can discredit something. You know, when you choose to say that is alleged, and then you state another thing, but you don't say it's alleged, that other thing suddenly looks more like a fact. So where people insist on the fact that it's allegations, like you see these leftists that want to smear me, they'll never say that, oh, is X has alleged this. They'll say, he did this. And that's their problem. See, that's where you start creating a fiction in your head. There is no second best crypto asset. There is no second best crypto asset. Russ Chifley says, the anal hedonist is Harry Sisson on his burner account. Prude sends a super chat. He says, thanks for your unique takes. I can always count on you to be original and not just parrot talking points. Well, thank you very much. Yeah, it is rare what I do. In the end, there's not much people out there who just produce constantly original ideas. Not that my ideas will not eventually converge with those of others, but at least try. At least try to start from scratch and build a philosophical vision of the current times based on your own principles. You have to be kind of autistic to do that because the world is spammed with social signals. And most people, they're like a radio. They're just listening to it. I was thinking about planning the Patreon Subscribestar Hangout. Let's do this Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time after the regular show. So it's going to be Monday the 21st. Monday the 21st. Apu Groiper says, Jeff, how did you choose your PhD program? Well, I wouldn't say you choose a PhD program. You choose a lab. And then that lab will throw you into a PhD program. But you don't select, you don't say, I'm going to go be educated in PhD in neuroscience. What happened is that I was a Bachelor of Science in Biology, studying as an undergrad. And I wanted to start research quick. I've always been like, I want to be one step ahead because then they review your CV and they compare with people of your age and they say, does he have more publication than them? So I wanted to go very hardcore, publishing in advance, starting my research in advance. So straight from the summer of my second year of undergrad biology, I wanted to do research and there was a very welcoming lab in, as it happens, in the Faculty of Medicine, of my thesis director was working in Lamprey. So I went there, and back then I wasn't yet a PhD student, but since I had done two summer internships to already learn all of the techniques in advance, I had a big advance if I wanted to continue on the PhD route. And it was a fascinating lab doing what I wanted to do, which is neural networks at the single network single neuron level. So to me, it was the ideal spot. I really was fascinated about single neurons and their function in the bigger brain. And most of the time, you either have one or the other. You have labs that are specialized in, let's study this neuron. I didn't want this. I wanted one neuron, but in the bigger brain. And there's not that many labs that can do this. And lampreys, as it turns out, are a fish that you can extract their brain completely from the body. And so you can have a fully functioning brain in a vat. And you can record single neurons in it. You can't do this in mice. You can't do this in monkeys. But you can in lampreys. So that's what guided my choices to earn my PhD in lampreys. Let me cough. Okay, so I wanted to show you guys some of my work here. So this is a Godot project that I've been working on for more than a year now, I think. And the goal is to create a MOBA, so Dota-style competitive game in which you have creeps, you farm vegetables. And so instead of being just creeps and fighting, I want the whole management aspect and strategic aspect to take the forefront. And I want this to be a collision between Dota and Minecraft. So I want this to be in a voxel world, 3D blocks, fully constructible world. Because I think that one of the weaknesses of Minecraft is that it remains really just a creative game. And yes, you can play hardcore and have enemies, but you're going to face just enemies that are strong because they've been made strong, because they're enemies controlled by the computer. To me, gaming needs to be a 5v5, 3v3. It needs to be humans that are outcompeting humans in terms of understanding of the balance of the game and in terms of competitive capacities. So to me, that's where gaming is fun. It's when it's accessible enough that it's not all about your time, your reaction time, you know, because you know that there's going to be some Chinese guy who clicks on the mouse faster than you. So I don't like these games where it's just reaction time and just precision of the guns. That's why I don't like Counter-Strike or that kind of thing. It's too action-oriented and too reaction-time-oriented. I like games. To me, the best games of the world have always been StarCraft, WarCraft, StarCraft, Warcraft, well, Dota, of course, Dota. So to me, it's this, when the knowledge of the game and the knowledge of the strategy of building, yeah, Age of Empires, not bad. Personally, it was more Civilization 2. Civilization 2 was kind of awesome. So I like a complex game with complex recipes. And I like it to be team-based, and I like it to be elo-based. So I want a game in which when you become better, you face better opponents. So the way the Godot environment works is you have your scripts here. Those are encoding the specific behavior of certain things, like avatar interaction here is controlling the whole behavior of any creeps. Whole behavior of any creeps. You have here tower.gd controls the behavior of the towers, which you will see. And you have a list of assets here. And you know, when you build a game, just the partial game that I have is not yet even complete. And yet it's a It's a freaking library of all sorts of blocks, all sorts of constructs, all sorts of animals, all sorts of buildings, each with their script, each with their function. The number of plants that there can be in that game, you know, all of the plants. It becomes a very complex library in which you advance slower and slower as the game progresses. So you can click on play and you're going to get an intro. It's going a little slower because I'm streaming, but so here you have the welcome menu. The welcome menu for now, you can connect to a server. I make it so that there's two instances of the game open to test server functions. So I've already made a chat box, so you can start typing. You can join different channels. You can name people admin. You can log in with MetaMask so that you have a permanent identity in the game. Let's start a game here. So what I was working on today, I was working on animating and the combat logic of towers and of Raxes. So here I built a tower. Eventually, when you play a full game, you're going to have to work to gather the resources, but I'm in a testing environment right now. So here I'm building a Rax, and we're going to produce random animals at a constant time interval. So I have my plants there, I have animals that are hanging out there, and here we go, the Rax has started to produce. So I was interested in the dynamics of tower projectiles. So here you got a tower projectile that got launched, and it should kill the flamingo as it enters the range of attack of the tower. Perfect, flamingo dead. Now here I have to work on my fireball projectiles because they stop. They have to be stopped when the flamingo dies. Finds another target. All right, so that is team one. Team one getting bombarded by the tower projectiles. Let's install a Rax for team two. Activate production. And now we're going to have some animals facing those. All right, we got some team two here. And we are detecting the radius of enemies and the attacks are starting. So now they are fighting against each other. All right, we have good combat. Attacks are being converted in damages. This turtle is alone, died. This snake is bugged. I have to review some of the coding when they die. And we have continuous fireball projectiles. All right. The Jack Acid says, I don't understand the objective. Imagine, this is not a final map, okay? I will work on the map. Imagine that you're five players against five. You build your axes. So you build, you gather your resources first, build your axes, you start farming some specific animals, you go grab some flowers, and it gives you some resources. Let's say this flower gives me a carrot, this flower gives me an apple, this flower gives me this, this flower gives me an avocado or lemon, this flower potato, mango, grapes. And now you come back to your base, you make some recipes that are making your animals more powerful. Meanwhile, the other team is building its own racks with its own animals, with its own superpowers. And eventually your goal is to outcompete, as is the case with any MOBA, the goal is to outcompete the flow of animals of the other team. Got some lettuce here. And then you can help your creeps by shooting poisonous projectiles on the other team. Now, you have to understand that this is a testing environment. I am I'm being poisoned by my own poison here. This is a testing environment. It's not meant to be the final game. It's just testing the behavior of these animals, testing that the gunshots are being responsive, that they are effectively removing hit points from the creeps. Now you can imagine this with blocks, you can imagine this with jungles separating the two teams, and now your goal is to push stronger than the other team pushes. Of course, right now the animals are random, but the animals will be a consequence of the animals that you're capable of hunting in nature, and it will show the quality of your animal will be determined by the quality of your work as a biologist in nature. So as you go hunt these creatures, you can farm them in the sheds, in the reproductive sheds. You can farm them with better food. Better food will give you better potions, better powers. And that is it. That's the poison effect. Let's add a tower and see if it strikes those creatures. And boom. Dead cow. Dead. Yeah, so that is the current state of the game, and when you do a game, you have to plan everything. So that's just the script that controls the behavior of the tower. So in Godot, there's always a ready function, which is the first thing that is executed once the node enters the game. So here I'm checking that. So you have to check that you're the server. My player ID equals 1. That confirms I am the server. I have the responsibility of managing the behavior of this tower. At the tower, I had an aggro timer, which will trigger a function every 1 second, and an attack cycle timer every 3 seconds. So every 3 seconds, the tower can throw a projectile. And every 1 second, the tower checks if there are new animals in the aggro zone that it could target. So checking the aggro zone. Well, if I don't have an aggro target already, scan among the existing closed targets, find the closest one, and define it as aggro target. Now, once you have an aggro target defined, you can attack it. So attack target will trigger every 3 seconds. if you have an aggro target, spawn a tower projectile. Now, this is a network function, RPC. So it's sending to all the players in the game, spawn a tower projectile. Now you get into the game reception of these network signal, tower projectile. And now you have the function that spawns a new ball of fire. Literally, the ball of fire is a player in the game, just like any objects that are added. Any objects that are added to the game, whether it's a character, a player, a watcher, a tower, a plant, or even the fireballs that the tower send, is a spawn. So you spawn a tower projectile. Now it refers to the function world constant spawn tower projectile. So you can then go into your world constant. That is my master file for all of the characteristics of all of the creatures, their name, their animation, their graphics, their properties, the amount of sugar that each plant has, the biochemistry, sugar, protein, fat, whether it's axable, shovelable, and it has a couple of global functions such as spawn tower projectile. Now, what that does is it adds to the game of all of the network players. It says, create a little ball of fire, make it start here, and make it go there. And the tower projectile itself has its own programming setup, because the tower projectile must track the target. It cannot just go on a straight path. The target is going to be moving, so you have to, every second, so in Godot, physics process is a function that gets executed at every frame of the game. So every second, you could have 30, 60, 120 times, this function will trigger. And here I make the integral calculation of, okay, this target has been mostly there in the past 20 seconds. It's headed mostly there. Therefore, the fireball must be headed mostly in that direction. It's basically a running average. I call it the integral array. It's a running average of the 20 last position of the target and how the fireball must update in a weighted fashion toward the current target. John Drake says, how many hours have you put into this? Bro, I haven't even begun to represent all of the programming that I've done. This was all integrated on a base of an already existing 3D world built by Zillan, who has done a 3D voxel world, but there were no animals, no creatures, no game. He just made a 3D world. He did it very well. But the hours starting from there, I must have put at least 1,000 hours already. And we're really just beginning. I mean, we're years away from a functional product. But I love doing this. It's so cognitively demanding to maintain all this database of scripts in your head. it is a passion. Let's see here. Oh, yeah, Zillan has created this game. He calls it the blocky game, and it's really just the principle that you can add blocks, and you know, you can, it's really just a Minecraft game, and I have added many blocks to it so that it's even more extensive than Minecraft, the number of blocks, but it does have Minecraft like blocks to begin with. So yeah, now we have a spawning of plants, spawning of animals, rack spots. So it's those are also poison projectiles. They have their own behavior with respect to gravity and the balloon trajectory. Yeah, that is what I love to do. When I have really time that I can spend doing what I want to do. I love advancing on my game, even if it is not to be eventually, perhaps it won't ever be a consumable game. I would love it to be, though. I would love if I could have the time in my life to finish this, because I think it can get very interesting. The mix of the creative and the competitive is something that other games have very much failed at, in my view. So I'm trying to resurrect my window for news. Okay, there it is. Jackie Chan has sent a super chat.
Thoughts on girls that want to go to school and get a job? I talked to a cute girl who wants to go to a police academy or something. Should I date her and try to talk her out of it? What about the ones almost graduating from a degree program like that?
Yeah, man, the professional woman. Of course, it's not the best. It's not the maximum desirability. They're going to always be obsessed first and foremost with their job. And in certain circumstances, it's not so bad. They're going to get pregnancy vacations, and they're going to get vacations to care for the children at the beginning. So it's not dramatic. But there is a set of problems there, which is first that these women are with the mentality not only that you should do exactly like them, but that you should outcompete them at the workplace. So you should be not only going out there, be a slave of the capitalist system, but you have to make more money than them. And that's where it becomes tight. Now, if you have a truly open-minded woman who's doing her professional stuff and who's also telling you that you can do what you want, that maybe you could even be a prior in terms of taking care of the children, then you can develop the kind of dynamic that should happen in a couple, which is the division of labor to the most efficient, in the most efficient way. And perhaps you can pursue self-employment from home and care for the children. But that dream, let me tell you, it barely happens because the professionally minded woman is not truly obsessed with her having a job. She's really just obsessed with, she is convinced by the system that everyone must have a job, and that therefore you're not good if you don't have a job also. So be careful with this kind of woman. They will very quickly, even if they go out there and they're not doing any profit, they are just rolling for 30k a year, 40k a year, they're going to expect you to do 60, 80k a year, because they are in the professional and education mindset. Now, those are all warnings. Now, in the end, you're not going to be able to make a choice on this, because the fact is, if this professional woman is interested in you, you're going to have to inseminate. So it's not like you get to choose. But if you do have a choice, I would pursue a woman who has not pursued this kind of trajectory, who is staying at home, who doesn't feel that she is forced to produce something for society, who doesn't feel that she is forced to be in these college and degrees and all. But that is very rare. So you're probably you just have to inseminate. That is the answer to your question, Jackie Chan. I will replay your super chat because the volume was low.
Thoughts on girls that want to go to school and get a job? I talked to a cute girl who wants to go to a police academy or something. Should I date her and try to talk her out of it? What about the ones almost graduating from a degree program like that?
You should date, you should talk them out of it if possible, and you should inseminate no matter what. That is my answer. Of course, if she's at the end of her program, that's a perfect... You can use these special moments in life. You can use this to your advantage by trying to inseminate and saying, hey, isn't that the perfect moment? You could have a baby now. And, you know, as you're getting out of your college and you don't yet have a job, isn't that the perfect moment? Now, you're going to face a problem, which is that these women have pictured in their mind that they would get a baby only after getting their career. nonsensical societally, but that's what you're going to be faced with. So, of course, if you date at this age, we're talking about unprepared women that some of them will end up accepting insemination, but you're going to have to pressure and you're going to have to make them feel so much better as moms as they could as professionals. But that is the challenge of the modern world. You have to try it. Yes. So do date this girl. If you see a better opportunity, then drop her for the better opportunity. But until you have a better opportunity, date this girl, try to push, and you know, there is a natural instinct in women to want babies. So even if they tell you, I want to do this college thing, you can always be there to try to exploit the downs in her view of her own career and say, hey, wouldn't that be easy if you were just a mother for a couple of years? And some of them will take the offer, so go for it. Gasparovsky, thank you so much for your super chat. He sent $5, he says tips, and then he sends $10. He says, hey, Jeff, do you know Warski say you might be a cannibal on YouTube using edited clip of your show? Okay, I might be a cannibal. That's technically he's correct. You know, everyone might be a cannibal. Everyone is a dormant cannibal. As long as they're not hungry, you know. Everyone is a cannibal in the making. Look, these people, they're making an obsession about me. It's unbelievable how much goodness I've extracted from life since 2017. Children, one after the other, parenting, production of a game, you know, all sorts of things that make me so happy. And yet these guys are still being like fucking beta females, just talking about me. Hey, I said this. Oh, you said this. That doesn't look very good. I don't know what to tell you. I'm not even frustrated. It's not even that I'm offended that they are saying false stuff about me, because I've subscribed to this game knowing this was the game. But I'm so frustrated for them out of empathy. Can you imagine how low your life has to be for JF to be on your mind? Like, seriously. If JF is on your mind and it's not because of the revolutionary phenotype, imagine the mental anguish of your existence. And imagine the mental anguish that I'm so on your mind that you have to make up false stuff and interpret in the most dark way possible all of the jokes that I constantly do. And I've been a regular of dark humor since the beginning of my career. And imagine being so stupid that you bite the bait every time. That is what's so disappointing to me about humanity, is that I'm dropping these baits, and it's like there shouldn't be a single person fooled by these baits. There shouldn't be. Of course, when you are a celebrity and you produce a show, you know there's this thing called clipping, and that's why it's funny. That's why dark humor is funny. It's because everyone who hears you say that crazy thing says, "Oh, clip! Oh, I'm gonna clip JF." That is funny. That is comedy. That is why it's funny. And the more serious I can be as I state this crazy thing, and the more ambiguous I can be about the real meaning of it, the more it's funny. But it's funny. It's funny because there are retards who will actually believe it. That makes it even more funny. But it makes it also depressing from a societal standpoint. Like, Oh, wow. You want the Fermi paradox? You want to know why there's no extraterrestrials out there?
On the other end of the spectrum, what do you think about 35-plus-year-old who wants to get pregnant right away? I would rank her lower than the former case of the career girl personally. I also don't think I'd date her more than 3 months without insemination.
Listen.
On the other end of the spectrum, what do you think about 35-plus-year-old who wants to get pregnant right away? I would rank her lower than the former case of the career girl personally. I also don't think I'd date her more than 3 months without insemination.
That is absolutely true. If you go for a 35 years old, there needs to be strict conditions on the beginning of insemination. And even before I even make the first baby, I would talk about the second baby and the third baby and how she needs to quickly shut down her breastfeeding, because breastfeeding will make you infertile for about a year or two. If you breastfeed for a whole 2 years, you're not going to get a baby for these 2 years. So yes, you have to put this very clear with them at the beginning. Now, this is the eternal question. What do I do? Do I fuck the 35-year-old, or do I invest everything on the 22-year-old, which... And this is a big question you ask. I have no clear answer to give you. What I can tell you is I am a specialist of using the strength of nature, like in a jujitsu fashion. You know, the whole philosophy of jujitsu is, why would you make an effort if the body of your opponent is in such a way that it will make the move itself? So lead your opponent into the movement that you want him to do. And that is how I've approached dating 35 years old. At this point, I am a specialist, really an expert of inseminating 35 years old. And let me tell you, in principle, the 22-year-old with a reproductive career of potentially 10 babies ahead of her is infinitely more valuable. And throughout the whole history of humanity, you would be crazy to go for the 35-year-old. That being said, we are in a special world, and you have to take the birth pill into account, the condoms, the fact that women are brainwashed. And let me tell you, you're not guaranteed to have 10 babies at all. In fact, you're very unlikely to get 10 babies from the 22-year-old. So you need to account this in your trade-off. Here's some of the features of a 35-year-old. First, the 35-year-old will have more of a sexual career behind her. She basically uses you as a sperm donor, and she will see you as a sperm donor. The likelihood that you will have a durable marriage with a 35-year-old is much lower. But is the likelihood so interesting on the side of the 22-year-old? Maybe not, because maybe she's a crazy leftist who will grow into an ugly woman who wants to divorce you and divorce rape you. So it's like, it's not good on the 35 side, but it's not necessarily much better on the 22-year-old side. Now, it all depends on the ideological structure of the woman. If you have a 22-year-old who is all about single marriage and homogamy forever, and she tells you how she wants to devote her whole life to you, if she's very explicit about it and she has those principles, then that's good. But similarly, the 35-year-old could be like this too. But you're going to have to ask her, and you're going to have to scan her mind here. There's two things that women will tell you about marriage. They will either tell you, to me, marriage is something that Jesus wants me to do, and I am absolutely bound to you, and I am your slave forever, and I want to serve you and love you until we die, and there is no other choice. Either she tells you something like this, in which case, whether she's 22 or 35, she is the way to go. Or she tells you something more like, oh no, I believe in marriage. And yeah, marriage is a strong commitment to me. And if everything goes well and the relationship goes well, I don't see the possibility of divorce. I think we will be together forever. If she says something like that, she's a divorce rapist who has no... she has no conception of obligation. If there's no conception of principle, obligation, or full devotion to each other, she's going to divorce rape you. So you're faced with this problem. Now, another feature on the positive side of the 35-year-old. The 35-year-old is in the business of making babies and making babies quick. So you're going to get insemination so much more easy on the 35-year-old. So it's worth it. It's worth it to inseminate the 35-year-old and then see what are our principal levels and whether she's going to drop you after the first baby. But if she drops you after the first baby, you need to be ready to rebounce and switch to another woman. So that would be my approach. Take all of the opportunities you have, 22, 35, measure their principles, measure their levels of morality and their dedication to monogamy. Don't let yourself be deceived by talking like, oh no, I think we're going to stay together. I think it's going to go fine. I think we're going to be together forever. I think you feel. So you're telling me that if you don't feel anymore in a year or in 2 years from now, you're going to divorce me. So if there's no principle, there's no marriage. Vlad says child support will be expensive. Well, of course, I'm talking here with the assumption that you have a strategy to not pay child support. Of course, don't inseminate a 35-year-old if you can't flee the state and be unreachable for child support. So, the landscape is drab. The landscape is very, very bad. And there is no easy answer that I can give you. The 35-year-old will be quicker to insemination. But the 22-year-old has a potential for more insemination on the long term. But the 22-year-old can also wreck your life just as much as the 35-year-old. So always be there with your Bitcoin. Always be secretive about your wealth. Never share your wealth with the person until you are absolutely certain that she is a follower of Jesus Christ style extreme radical ideologist who will forever stay with you. If she's not that, she's gonna divorce rape you. But get the inseminations you can in between wherever you can. The White House has published this whole Lab Leak website. The Lab Leak with Donald Trump, the true origins of COVID-19. It's very cheap to me. It's very cheap. because those things first, they emerged into a COVID opposition that opposed itself to Donald Trump. Donald Trump has managed most of the COVID crisis. Let us not forget, most of the attack on individual rights.
Happy upcoming Easter, King JF.
All right. Thank you, Nicholas Petris. Thank you very much. The Jack Acid says, I married a 22-year-old and she gave me one baby and divorced raped me. So that's why you need to be ready to run, ready to leave them without support, and ready to withdraw your Bitcoin to a secretive area. You can never trust them. The state of marriage is simply completely broken. Buto says, now in Canada, they want you to tell them how much BTC you have, or you can pay up to $2,500 a year in fine, them being the revenue agency. Really? I'll have to check those rules. I hadn't heard of this. German in Berlin has had enough, so that's a case of a fight.
Oh my God.
So you have the black guy pushing the white guy onto the car, but now it's becoming a matter of car safety.
Oh my God. Oh my God, Digga. Oh mein Gott, Digga, was geht ja?
Oh, well, you have, even if you're in a fight, you have to respect the third party property because you're gonna get punched by him. Graciela Castellanos, a migrant to LA, drowned her 7-year-old daughter in a bathtub because she was obsessed about possibly not becoming a legal resident. A neighbor heard the little girl yelling, "Mommy, please no." The narcissism of woman. She has a problem with her immigration status and has uncertainty about whether it's going to happen or not. She kills her own daughter. The absolute narcissism and danger of woman. John Drake says, "My wife is a CPA here in Canada and we know nothing about this." Yeah, the condition that Bruto is talking about has been talked about. There was a law that they wanted to pass, but I think they have delayed it. I think it's not a current request. Non-white jurors exhibit a bias for non-white defendants and against white defendants in the UK. White jurors also exhibit a slight bias for non-white defendants. So basically, both black people and white people, they go easier on black defendants. This is so frustrating because we're about to see a complete crumbling of due process, and it will happen under age-old rules that have been operating in society for hundreds of years. The principle of a jury trial, the principle of being judged by your peers. But when your peers become black, it's not the same. So the principle must be rejected because it was built on assumptions. It was built on assumptions. Now, what happens if you have one black juror on the jury of Carmelo Anthony? You're not going to be able to find Carmelo guilty of murder. One black juror, and of course there's going to be one black juror. There's a black judge already. And we're going to end up legalizing black on white murder. This is where it's headed. Sarah Fields gives an example of the injustice. When right-wing white people get attacked, they don't get the services that black people get. She was getting attacked. There, it cannot be clearer. Someone says on Twitter, "Hopefully they huff Sarah's kids and family." This is an appeal to murder. Murder on Twitter. And what does Twitter answer? "After reviewing the available information, we have found that Smirk 2025 hasn't broken our rules against posting violent threats." So, calling for the murder of someone is not a violent threat. And finally, as a last news item, Candace Owens has published a DM from Rosen Barr. Well, it's Rosen Barr who published it herself. So, Rosen Barr, this is why women shouldn't speak publicly. Everything they say is socially contextual. They have no concept of truth. Everything is about the bubble of specific people that are around them at that time. Everyone knows it. You know it. And women know it. Because when women hang out with women, they get this, have you heard what this woman said? And so that's why women cannot speak publicly in a sensical fashion. It's because their brain is fully dedicated to rumor mill and, oh my God, she said this and he said that and she responded this. It's all the social world. There's no truth. So Rosen Barr appears on a show. She dunks on Candace Owens like, boom! Take this, bitch! I don't know exactly what she said, but apparently she goes really hard on Candace Owens. But after the recording of the show, it's not even been published yet. Rosen Barr realizes, oh no, I said all these mean things about Candace Owens. Let me go to DM Candace Owens about it. Well, I did it again. This time I was super triggered and made a rather aggressive comment on a podcast about you. It sounded very insane looking back at their edit, and I wanted to reach out and get ahead of it. Obviously, you and I have big disagreements, and I'm a crazy old Jewish lady. But I suspect they're going to try to make it go viral to pump up their podcast. And hopefully you treat it as another Big Mouth Roseanne mom moment. But if you don't and want to argue about it publicly or whatever, that's your right, of course. What is the meaning of speaking publicly if you're going to step back on it before it's even published? Unbelievable. And of course, Roseanne is constantly in oscillation between her allegiance to Jewry, which is very clear, and her hatred of all of these Candace Owens-style anti-Semite. But at the same time, she is out there making jokes about the Holocaust and, you know, making jokes that even I don't think I could even do in Canada. So she is trying ultimately to secure Jews, jokes about Jews only to her, because she believes she has a specific access to it. And she was saying, if Christianity was down to being just Rome, just Italy, just the Vatican, if Christians were reduced to being only occupying the Vatican, I would never dare criticize the Christians. So it's like she is invoking the fact that because Jews are pushed into Israel, this small location, because it's the last stand of the Jews, they should never be criticized. The problem of this, first, is that Jews have a very, very extensive diaspora with very, very extensive negative effect onto the nations that welcome it. First, so Israel could be annihilated tomorrow morning and there would still be Jews and there would still be very Jews in very strong position. That's the first problem. Second, any minority or group of any kind should be criticized, not on the basis of their number. It's not. This is exactly the same thing they do with blacks. It's like, oh, go easy on blacks when you apply the law because what? Because you have a bigotry of inferiority. You have the subtle bigotry of low expectations. And ultimately, you don't want us to criticize Jews because you feel that you're in a survival existential war. But we all are. We all are. I'm in a survival, existential war, not only against Jews, Muslims, because as a Christian descendant, I'm in a minority in the whole world, but even among Christians. If the world tomorrow would be populated by South American, Venezuelan-style socialist Christians, I wouldn't feel at home at all. So we're all down to the Vatican. We're all withdrawn to our last quarters. There isn't much space left in the world where I can run to be left alone. So think about this, Roseanne, next time you think that you have a special status as a Jewish person. That is it for tonight, boys. I'm going to take a break for the weekend, as I almost always do. The weekend, I used to stream on Saturdays, but now it feels good to have a 2 days of vacation for the weekend, so I'm going to continue that trend. And on Monday, when we come back, it's going to be Patreon, Subscribestar Hangout. So join the Patreon or the Subscribestar at the $20 level if you'd like to be part of our Easter conversation, because it's going to also be Easter, apparently. Bye-bye.